Hello, I'm Elena Del Val, and this is the HispanicNPR.com podcast. My guest today is Aras Nasarovas, who is Information Security Researcher at CyberNews. We will discuss DeepSeek's cyber attack, how insecure AI technology threatens business leaders and organizations. Aras specializes in cybersecurity and threat analysis. He investigates online services, malicious campaigns, and hardware security while compiling data on the most prevalent cybersecurity threats. According to his bio, he, along with the CyberNews research team, have uncovered significant online privacy and security issues impacting organizations and platforms such as NASA, Google Play, and PayPal. According to his bio, the CyberNews research team conducts over 7,000 investigations and publishes more than 600 studies annually, designed to help consumers and businesses better understand and mitigate data security risks. Aras, welcome.
Welcome. Hello.
Share a conflict of interest statement with us, if you would. Who do you represent for purposes of today's discussion?
Yeah, I represent CyberNews, specifically the CyberNews research team.
What exactly is CyberNews?
CyberNews is a news outlet or a news publication where we, of course, focus mostly on cybersecurity, but also like some AI and technology news, if it has like any ties to cybersecurity.
Is it publicly traded or privately held?
It is privately held.
And what country is it based in?
It's based in Lithuania, although we have offices around the world. The headquarters are in Lithuania, Vilnius.
And the owners, is there anything you can tell us about the people who own the company?
The records are public. So our CEO is Dainius Vanagas. And let me see if I can find any other information to share. I think that's, I don't know, is that enough?
Sure. Not everyone is familiar with the outlet, so this gives us an idea of where you're coming from, literally and figuratively. Why Lithuania? Is that a part of the world that has a particular interest or capability in this particular category of technology?
Yeah, so, in Lithuania, cybersecurity is one of the more strong sectors in like IT business. Lithuania also like has a lot of other companies that delve into cybersecurity, including like NordVPN, Surfshark, what else? Oxy Labs. We're quite a few cybersecurity centered companies in Lithuania, and therefore, there's a lot of people who are experts in the field, and that's why it's a pretty good place to have a news outlet that focuses on cybersecurity, to have the people with expertise to conduct research and cover these topics.
Let's start with something really basic. What are we referring to when we say AI? I know it's artificial intelligence, and it's the word of the day, probably the year, if not the decade. But is there a short definition for purposes of the discussion we're having today that will help everybody understand what exactly it is?
Yeah, so the modern definition of AI mostly focuses on AI based on like machine learning, which is like a whole other technology that can also be used in purposes other than AI. And essentially, AI nowadays encompasses generative tools, so tools such as large language models, which are usually in a form of like chatbots. Also, like image and video creation tools also fall under that category. So these are the main things when people would think of when talking about modern AI.
And what does this mean for the average non-tech person, for the average business person? I talk with people and they all think that what it's going to mean, it hasn't quite happened yet, but they think that any day now, it means they're going to make more money because they're going to have fewer staff. Is that a good way for business people to think of AI, all of these different subcategories that you've described?
I'd say, well, it's possible to run a company like that to just replace a bunch of employees with AI. Although that's probably not the best way to go about it. Most companies nowadays try to incorporate AI into their workflows to assist their existing employees to increase their productivity and throughput of work they do. So you get the benefit of having more employees without hiring more employees in a sense. But it doesn't necessarily like need to lead to like layoffs.
What is the landscape, for lack of a better word, of AI? When we say AI, there is more to that in terms of companies. So one of the things that we said we're going to talk about is DeepSeek. But before DeepSeek, there was ChatGPT. So paint a picture for us, if you would, Aras. Who are the players in the AI landscape?
Yeah, so one of the main and the most prominent players in the AI space is OpenAI with their ChatGPT and Sonnet models. So those are the chatbot and the AI that creates images and videos. They were one of the first that kind of like started this whole like race for better AI. With the release of ChatGPT 3.5, that was around like a couple of years ago now, and yeah, that started competition from other companies. They started launching like their own AI models. So Google has Gemini, Apple has Apple Intelligence, which I think is also incorporated with OpenAI. OpenAI's models. Yeah, there are other tools for like web searches assisted with AI. Yeah, there are quite a few companies to choose from in terms of a specific AI application or function.
And what about DeepSeek? They've come into the party and changed the playing field.
DeepSeek is well, relatively new. It launched last month on January 20th, and it was mainly disruptive because of well, where it's coming from. It's coming from China. Its developers are a Chinese company, and why that is significant is because China is sanctioned by the U.S. government and cannot receive like the latest and greatest tech to actually train AI models. And yeah, so that was really surprising that they were able to match the best models that the U.S. market has with less hardware because of the export restrictions.
Despite the restrictions, they were able to build on the existing systems and come up with a model that is more efficient. Is that a good way to say it?
Yes, that's correct.
And what are we referring to when we say the DeepSeek cyber attack?
A few days after launch, I think it started on January 25th, and lasted a couple of days. DeepSeek's website started experiencing some issues, and there was like a disclaimer on top that says like, "Hey, we're experiencing a cyber attack, so like new registrations are not allowed for like a certain amount of time until we deal with it." So that was the cyber attack and in question, and the signs mainly show, especially like in terms of the communication at the time, that it was like a DDoS or distributed denial of service attack, which basically means that a bunch of computers around the world flood the company servers with a bunch of requests to a point where it can like no longer respond properly or on time, and that disrupts the availability of the service, so people other people cannot can no longer connect to it because it's too busy answering these malicious requests from a bunch of computers around the world.
Do we know who was behind the attack?
Currently, it's not known. I would assume DeepSeek would have like launched an investigation by now into trying to uncover who was responsible. But at the moment, it's not publicly known who launched the attack.
And why do you think that DeepSeek was attacked? Were they a particularly attractive target because they were newcomers?
I think there's probably some of that. So since DeepSeek themselves haven't like released like any details about it yet, and I think also it's worth mentioning that since it's a Chinese company, it needs to comply with Chinese data security laws, which can also limit how much they can disclose about cyber attacks in certain scenarios. So that might be the reason why they haven't released any public information about it yet, or it could be that they're like still investigating it. But yeah, like third parties that kind of track DDoS attacks around the world. They like registered that attack and like noticed that the attackers were pretty sophisticated in terms of they were monitoring any changes that DeepSeek would make during the attack and adapt very quickly to continue overwhelming new resources with the fair traffic. That kind of shows that it was targeted and closely monitored. And since the attack was like 5 days after launch, I think it started on a Saturday and continued until Monday. So that's also like a strategic time for to launch such an attack because most people would be like out of office and wouldn't be able to help and respond.
Why is this relevant to anybody?
Well, why is it relevant? So, DDoS attacks, distributed denial of service attacks, what they generally aim and are able to do is ensure that the service is not available for potential customers or users. So, in this case, people wouldn't be able to check out the new model that everyone was talking about, kind of like lowering its potential impact at the start of like a new model being launched. So that would like potentially decrease like the attention it could get. because if people wanna try and like try it out for themselves and it doesn't work, they'll just like go somewhere else, forget about it and not think about it.
And in the long term, does it really make a difference?
Well, in the long term, distributed denial of service attacks, they don't really do like long-lasting damage, but the reputational damage could affect the business side, because you would lose a lot of customers if your product doesn't work at the start of the launch, when it's like one of the most important times for your product to work and be able to try it out by new customers and users.
Do you think that it had a big impact on DeepSeek's launch?
I think it definitely did have a pretty big impact, but they like eventually they were able to sort it out and get their service back online and available for users to check out. And I think there was like still enough hype about it that people still wanted to check it out after these issues were fixed. It's hard to calculate how exactly how much it affected the company and potential customer gains, or yeah, new customers that were lost because of the attack.
What takeaway do you think our listeners, business leaders, and organizations should take away from this cyber attack?
The takeaway is, yeah, security is important. Distributed denial of service attacks, those can be prevented if enough attention is paid in terms of like when the services infrastructure is set up and put in place. These can be prevented. And that if such an attack would be prevented, it would minimize any like losses. One thing that's also kind of important to know is DeepSeek currently is like a private company, so it's difficult to see how much damage was done. But the public companies, it's very common to see that after a cyber attack, whether it's like a DDoS or a data breach, which is way worse, a company share value usually just drops significantly by like, I don't know, 10, 20, 30%. So that's also like something to keep in mind in terms of damages that can cause. That can be caused by a cyber attack, and another reason to try and prevent such attacks.
How can they be prevented?
They can be prevented by, just hiring stronger, bigger security teams, investing into tools that security teams are able to use. Companies can also employ like third-party assistance in a sense, so that's kind of like there's quite a few tiers to it. One of them would be just to have like an easily available contact form or like an email that security research, if they find any issues with your product, would be able to disclose it on time, and you would be able to fix it quickly. Another tier of that would be to try and launch a bug bounty program. So that would be a program where you incentivize security researchers to try and break your application or service for the purpose of like finding vulnerabilities, which they would report to you. You would pay some like reward money for our work, and you would have an issue fixed, which otherwise might not be known and in the future exploited by attackers. And another way to go about it would be to hire penetration testing experts, which essentially means just hiring like a team of hackers to try and like break into your system with like specific rules that you set between you and the teams. And yeah, they would be able to try and like see throughout like your whole network or whatever the scope is, if any vulnerabilities are present, what's their impact and how to fix them.
It sounds like you need a lot of resources to prepare.
Security can take quite a lot of resources, and importance in security is always important, but the more kind of like successful your business is in terms of like brand recognition or just I don't know how big your business is, that's usually where you would need to scale up more in terms of like technologies and bigger security teams and more regular penetration tests and all that. Resources are always important for in terms of resources that should be spent on security are always important and
What that means is that for, if I'm hearing what you're saying correctly, it means that if you're a well-known company, you're a big target because you're desirable as a target. If you're a small company, if you're a nonprofit, if you're a no-name, let's say, then you're less desirable, but perhaps you're a lot more vulnerable and maybe that would make you the bigger target.
In terms of smaller companies, they oftentimes don't really have the resources to spend to strengthen their cybersecurity. It would mainly mean that it's easier to break into a smaller company than it is to break into a bigger company. And that ease of access is what makes it more dangerous, or a bigger target, so to say. For smaller businesses, just because on average they are just less secure than bigger companies, and therefore easier to break into.
I've noticed a trend of small businesses that used to have websites of their own and now have gone in the opposite direction where they took down their website because it was hacked and they're relying on social media accounts to interact with their customers. Do you think that going to continue? Is AI going to aggravate that? And are these cyber attacks that we're talking about or these cyber vulnerabilities going to accelerate this trend?
That's definitely an interesting trend. I don't think it helps a whole lot in terms of security because social media accounts can also be attacked and breached, and I don't know, just bots can be hired for relatively cheap to either like destroy the reputation of an account or just to flood the account with spam messages. Which would be kind of like a equivalent to like a DDoS attack in a sense. In terms of less websites being made for companies, I think with AI technologies, there's actually more businesses being created that utilize AI technologies to create websites, to create even like whole business models and materials for like design and stuff like that. So, yeah, I don't think there's going to be like less websites for companies. I think there's going to be more, maybe just like smaller companies that mostly focus on things outside of IT. So, like supplying materials or manufacturing, they might be compelled to, I don't know, shut their website down and communicate via other means.
Yes, so I've seen a number of businesses who had websites, or still do, but they hired someone, they paid someone to build their website, but they don't have control over the content because either whoever they hired is no longer in their employ, they just hired someone to do the work and then they kept going, or they don't have the funds to continue paying someone on an ongoing basis. And so they have a static presence, if you will. There are no updates on their websites. They've either, in some cases, have been hacked and have taken down their websites or lost access to their websites, or they're just static and they've moved on to other means of communicating, as I was saying, via social media. What does this tell us, for example, for businesses and organizations that are working on a shoestring budget? In other words, if they have very little funding, they're not going to have the type of cybersecurity necessary to defend from these DDoS and attacks that we discussed with DeepSeek. How can they protect themselves?
Yeah, so there's a concept in cybersecurity called an attack surface. So basically, how much stuff there is that could potentially be attacked one way or another. So, for instance, if you no longer host your own website and you do all your communication via social media, your only worry in terms of cybersecurity would be to protect those social media accounts. So, setting strong passwords, using two-factor authentication, ensuring that you don't click on any phishing links because account credentials can be stolen through malicious links. By ensuring all of those things, you would have like a pretty decent cybersecurity posture. Yeah, essentially, if you're working on a smaller budget, just try and ensure that your attack surface is as small as possible.
And you're only going to be as strong as your weakest link. So if you're using a platform that is itself is not secure, whichever AI platform you're using for yourself or you're interacting with, whatever tools you're using, the weakest of those tools is your weak point. Is my understanding correctly?
Yeah, that's correct. And yeah, since you're talking about like AI tools, those can be their own like cybersecurity risk as well. If, for instance, one of them gets like breached, and your personal information, or not personal, business information, is accessed by cyber criminals, those could also like lead to essentially like similar consequences to your website or your network, your business network being breached. They could extract like similar information, like customer data. I don't know, any internal secrets, IP and stuff like that. By IP, I mean intellectual property.
So much data has already been leaked. So much data is already out there. But every day that passes, that data is older and has the potential to be less accurate, less current. How much of a concern are these attacks and are these breaches, these data hacks?
Well, they I would say they're still a pretty big concern because they haven't really like stopped. Data breaches are as common as ever, and attacks such as distributed denial of service are more frequent and cheaper to launch than ever. So, as you said, previous data breaches, previously leaked data, does become less valuable the more time passes, because it has the chance of like being not accurate anymore. And usually, that is once the data is like no longer worth anything to cyber criminals, it's just publicly shared for everyone. While the more recent data, or maybe data from breaches that the companies don't even know occurred, that is often the most priciest data and only shared within like small circles and kept private.
What about targets that seem particularly sensitive, say doctors, hospitals, lawyers, banks? I'm just astonished that we haven't heard of attacks on banks. They must be happening and we're just not hearing about it, right?
Well, they do happen sometimes. We, like our own team, actually discovered some banks that are like just blatantly leaking data, as in like their infrastructure doesn't even like have a password. So you can just like find their database on the internet and log into it without even like a password or a username and access everyone's data. So we found issues like that with some banks, and yeah, we disclosed it. They patched it. In terms of data breaches from like cyber criminals, these do occur. Although I think maybe less often in like the U.S. and Europe, and more often in other regions. Banks usually invest a lot into cybersecurity, and there's like a lot of compliance regulations that we need to meet. Yeah, so that those regulations also like require to have like regular penetration tests to check the bank security to ensure that like nothing malicious is inside. There's like no danger to sensitive data, that sensitive data is being kept in a reasonably secure manner, being encrypted and stuff like that. All of these things help prevent cyber attacks, although those are still possible.
Is there a difference in vulnerability between mobile devices and non-mobile devices? So desktop versus wearables or phones or tablets, etc.
It's a bit of a tricky question because, well, all devices to some degree are vulnerable. You would just use different kinds of attacks for different kinds of devices. There are certain mitigations that are in place in smartphones that aren't on desktops, but those aren't like a surefire security thing that will always protect your data. If you download a malicious app, it's probably going to do the same amount of damage on a phone than compared to like a malicious app on a desktop. You would basically get the same results in terms of damage. So I would say there's not a significant difference in terms of security.
What about the software that you're using? I heard about somebody, I forget who, one of the big ones, that is taking photos of your screen every 5 seconds, and that becomes essentially their property to use, to train, to sell.
That sounds like Microsoft Recall. That was a feature that Microsoft wanted to add into the Windows operating system, which would essentially, make screenshots every couple of seconds and connect it with like their on-device AI to kind of like summarize what you were doing, so you would be able to basically see what you were up to like a month ago, if you don't remember. But there was like a lot of backlash for that feature and a lot of security concerns and also privacy concerns because, once that data is collected, there's a possibility that that data would be sent to Microsoft for training AI models or other purposes. But yeah, I'm not sure if that's what you were talking about or if you were talking about something else.
That sounds like what I had heard about, that it was capturing your screen in order to assist you with your AI needs, and you have less work to do because it's carrying some of the load, but at the same time, it's gathering data about you and is using it to train and potentially to sell the data. So you may have client data, you may have customer data that would ordinarily be protected, and you are giving permission to a third party to access this data. Is there any scenario in which you're interacting with AI in which you're not doing that?
Not doing what exactly?
Giving access to a third party to your data, your client data, and potentially anybody that you're doing business with. If you're giving access, just to use a simple example, if you are giving access to a third party software to something as basic as your address book, there is all sorts of information that you are sharing with someone that belongs to someone else because you're sharing somebody's name, address, potentially social security number, transaction history. You are giving this information via the software to someone else, right? When you allow software to interact with your address book, your electronic address book.
There are alternatives. Nowadays, we do see a lot of software as a service products, which essentially means that the third-party software that you're using, be it like Photoshop or something to record or manage your business, a lot of these are like stored in the cloud or on the internet, and all of that information is not stored locally on your computer, but rather on that company's servers. So that means that, that information is shared with a third party, which often can be a security risk. But there's also alternatives such as local programs that actually store data on your computer alone. You would definitely need to do like security assessments of apps to kind of ensure that you're using apps that don't share your information outside of the organization or outside of your business or outside of your personal computer. But such options still do exist, although those are pretty rare nowadays.
Percentage-wise, we're talking about what, maybe less than 10% of people are storing their data locally?
Probably in the US and Europe, probably over 50% of people either store their data both locally and on the cloud or mostly on the cloud.
So anything that you're storing in the cloud is only as safe as whoever is managing the cloud, right?
There's kind of a, like an old saying that cloud is just a computer in someone else's basement. So yeah, it really depends on whose basement that is and how secure is that basement.
What can businesses, what can individuals do to protect their data, to protect their businesses?
So yeah, in terms of businesses, especially larger ones where you are able to have like a security team of like, I don't know, like 2 to 5 people that are only dedicated to ensuring like that your company is secure. One thing that a lot of companies do is security assessments of their own like third parties. So for instance, you're using like a certain software for like managing invoices. Your security team would be able to go through that software, see if it has like any obvious vulnerabilities, if it's storing data where you're not comfortable with them storing that data. You would basically be able to have insights on whether or not you should choose a particular application. And ensure that the applications you use are secure. So either ensuring that all your data is on premises, like in your company network, or it's stored with a third party that you do trust to keep your data secure.
The Cyber News Business Digital Index looked at 466 companies on the Fortune 500 list in the US and found that 84% of the companies had a score of D or lower. Wow, so if the Fortune 500 are failing, right? What can everybody else learn from that?
Our Business Digital Index is kind of like a side project that we started running last year, where essentially we scan public-facing websites of various companies. I think you quoted statistics from Fortune 500 companies. These statistics kind of let us see like a rough idea of how secure a certain company is. One thing to keep in mind with larger companies, companies in Fortune 500, is that large companies have a lot of infrastructure. And oftentimes there's even like issues knowing what kind of like servers you have, what kind of services you're running. Maybe you launched a website like 20 years ago and forgot that it's like still running. These kind of things can affect your security in like larger organizations. But also, when it comes to smaller businesses, it's less about managing a large pool of equipment or services or whatever, and more of an issue of not having people dedicated to security that can always be there and monitor and improve the security of your infrastructure and your services.
One of the categories, or actually, according to the information I have here from that same report, so that is the Cyber News Business Digital Index, and it says that the biggest Fortune 500 category is finance and insurance, and 102 companies on that list, 63% of their scores was D. Now that's worrying, not only because if they who have a very high requirement for security, perhaps more than most, are not doing well, then it's also a place of risk for anybody who has an interaction, say, with a bank. Any business, every business has to have an interface with a finance company, potentially a bank, possibly an insurance company. How can you protect yourself when you're doing business? Is there a list that says which companies are more vulnerable, who you should, where you should put your money, where you should be more careful? What can you tell us about that?
So in terms of lists of companies that are more secure and like maybe more trustworthy, there are unofficial lists, and the Business Digital Index that we have can be kind of used as one. But generally you would look for larger, more popular banks or financial institutions. Generally, those are more safe than smaller ones. But you can't really control how your third party deals with your data and how secure they keep that data. So it's a matter of trust, and you're the one who decides who you're going to trust and who you're not going to trust.
Is there a list that rates who has the best or the worst scores in terms of how well protected they are from cyber attacks?
Yeah, so the Business Digital Index is one of them. I'm sure there are similar projects by other companies as well. So if you look for it, you can find that information out there. Although that might not always be like 100% accurate, it can be like a good starting point to do your third-party risk assessments made by your security team and stuff like that. It could be a good place to start, but it's not a definitive solution.
Another category that scored very poorly in the report is IT and technology. How is that possible? 75% of those companies scored a D. Am I reading this correctly?
Yes. Yes, you are. So how is that possible? Well, IT and security are not always the same thing. IT can be innovations such as AI. It can be less useful innovations that were pretty prominent, like, I don't know, like internet-connected juicers and stuff like that. Not all companies that are in IT have a good understanding of security, but those are not like mutually inclusive. IT doesn't mean security. Security is a kind of like a subcategory of IT. And a lot of IT organizations mainly focus on delivering innovation or a cheaper product or just essentially making the business run properly and effectively and making profit. Sometimes that means less budgets for security teams or not even having a security team, which negatively affects how secure their business is.
This makes me think of the hospitality companies that had electronic locks to open the doors, and apparently they were very easy to hack. There was a very easy way for third parties to just access any of the rooms that were using a particular type of software, or the many cars apparently that can be hijacked remotely because they're electronic systems are not secure. Is my understanding the concept correctly?
Specifically in these cases, these systems where radio equipment, so equipment that communicates via radio waves. So, in terms of the hotel doors, it was like an insecure implementation of security keys. So basically, a person could come up with a reader and just like read the password for a specific room from the lock and just like replay it back to unlock it. Similar kind of situation is with older cars. Older cars just had like a code that they would send from like the key fob to the car. And if an attacker had like proper equipment, it could intercept that code when like you unlock a car and replay that code whenever it wants to unlock the car with the code that was captured. Nowadays there are more secure implementations such as rolling codes, codes where that change every time you unlock the car, a different password is used to unlock it again. Yeah, those are definitely like an example of IT information technology solutions that are not secure. And maybe they were relatively secure at the time when they came out, but technology has advanced. As technology advances, these vulnerabilities are easier to find and exploit. So new solutions continually need to be created to to fix any past vulnerabilities that are discovered.
There's been a lot of talk about quantum computing being on the cusp, and which seems to go right into what you were discussing. What can you tell us about that specifically as it relates to cybersecurity?
So the main kind of issue, the main kind of worry when it comes to quantum computing becoming better and better, is that it would be easier and easier to break encryption. So basically, whenever you're like sending a message to your friend or logging into a website, information gets encrypted before you send it off of your device and then gets decrypted at its destination so that anyone on the internet that might like receive your packet, be it like your internet service provider or someone on your local network, if you're like in a cafe, or if someone breached your local network, they wouldn't be able to see like your passwords, your messages, stuff like that. And that's all thanks to encryption. And the main thing that quantum computing poses a danger to is actually breaking that encryption. So that allows anyone between you and your destination when you interact with either a messaging app or a website to decrypt your web traffic and actually see what you were doing, what you were messaging, what was your password. And yeah, it's a big worry because governments have tried to break encryption and tried to force companies to not use encryption for the longest time to spy on people. But yeah, quantum computing would allow to both the governments and also like cyber criminals to decrypt almost like anything, which is the main worry.
Well, of course, the next question is, what does that mean for cryptocurrencies for crypto technology for Bitcoin?
Nowadays, people are creating cryptographic ciphers, so things that are used for encryption, to ensure that the encryption is strong and couldn't be broken. They are creating what they call quantum-resistant ciphers. And a cipher is just basically like a rule set of how you encrypt information. So these quantum-resistant cryptographic ciphers can be used to push the clock on quantum computing's threat a bit forward, so buying some time. Essentially, these quantum-resistant encryption algorithms and cryptographic algorithms make it harder for quantum computers to break that encryption. So we already kind of have a solution for the quantum computing threat, but also it's not implemented everywhere. There's like still quite a lot of services that don't use these encryption ciphers.
How complex technologically are they? How much know-how do you have in order to use the ciphers?
To use the ciphers, really not a whole lot. The implementations are often open source, so you can just like download a package as you would download like an application. Generally, you would use like an encryption cipher by itself in like a piece of code when you're developing software or program. You wouldn't use it as like an app. Although you could probably find apps that are used for encryption and allows you to use a bunch of ciphers. But yeah, using them is not that difficult. Creating new ones is probably the hardest part. Not a lot of people in the world are knowledgeable and smart enough to come up with new and good cryptographic ciphers.
How expensive are they?
Well, usually they are freely available. Although previously the US, I think, had an export ban on cryptographic ciphers, and some of those have like regional restrictions. But for the majority of cryptographic ciphers, these are free and open source. They are freely available to anyone.
What does this all mean? You're saying that we're buying a little bit of time. Is the rest in peace sign for blockchain, is it already underway? Are we at the end of blockchain technology's usefulness?
I think cryptographic blockchain technology will continue to be used to some extent for anonymous payments and stuff like that. Yeah, the whole crypto craze from like a year or two ago with NFTs and all those things, I don't think those are coming back in a significant way. So it's probably going to continue evolving as it did for like the last like 10 years, mainly focused on financial applications for anonymous payments.
What can our listeners do to learn more and be better prepared in what seems to be an escalatingly dangerous cyber environment?
Could you repeat the question?
Sure. How can our listeners prepare better in this environment that seems to be increasingly dangerous from a cyber security perspective?
Yeah, so probably the best thing that someone can do is learn about it, learn about the dangers that are present, learn about how to protect yourself from the dangers that are there at any given moment or time. If there's like any cyber attack that is really popular at a time, like for instance, I think like a year ago or 2 years ago, there was a vulnerability in a file transferring application that was used by a lot of big companies. It was called MoveIt, and one ransomware group found like a 0 day bug. So 0 day means that it's been known for the developer for 0 days. So it's not known by the developer what's the bug, how would it be fixed, how could it be fixed. So it was basically a bug that existed on like the newest version of software. Developers didn't yet know how to fix it. It wasn't yet fixed. That ransomware group attacked like a whole bunch of companies and extorted them for money. The threat of basically locking their files and threatening to publicly release them. If you knew about what was going on at the time, you could just uninstall that app from like all of your computers. So yeah, people couldn't hack into your computers. So yeah, knowledge, keeping up to date with what's happening, is one of the most important aspects in keeping yourself safe.
Are we approaching a place where the s best way to stay safe is to stay offline?
Well, in a sense, in terms of cybersecurity, that's one way to do it, definitely. But oftentimes, it can be really hard or really inconvenient to go completely offline. And you still might need to use some like off online services for like banking if you don't want to go to like a physical location. Messaging cannot really be done offline. It can be done without internet by like radio or SMS or whatever, but you're still connected to like some sort of network using some sort of data transfer. So yeah, remotely messaging someone while being completely offline, you would probably need to like use like smokestacks or something, which would be pretty inconvenient. So yeah, one thing to kind of take away from it is oftentimes it's no longer really an option to go offline completely. And in that sense, you need to evaluate on how to do what you need to do online safely and securely.
Aras, thank you for joining us from Vilnius, Lithuania.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
And to our audience, you have been listening to Aras Nasarovas, who is Information Security Researcher at CyberNews, who discussed DeepSeek's cyber attack, how insecure AI technology threatens business leaders and organizations. To propose a guest for the show, you can email me directly at editor@hispanicmpr.com. That's editor@hispanicmpr.com.